the hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show. Coming at you hot, 2 days in a row, big commitments. And of course, yesterday I promised you that we would have a new commitment this afternoon. Well, it turns out Jonathan Kuminga, former number one prospect in the class of 2021, well, he had different plans. Even though he tweeted and retweeted his plan to commit tomorrow, he committed last night with Shams over the Athletic and Stadium. So here to talk through all this with me and more, I got Brian Snow on the other line. Brian, were you surprised to see him commit last night when he told us twice that he was committing tomorrow?
If there's one thing I've learned in this business, it's never be surprised. With that said, yeah, I mean, I was taken aback. I was like, well, you know, move on to something else now and, you know, get the story out and let it go because, you know, Jonathan decided to scoop himself, and if that's apparently his right.
I was so confused. I woke up this morning, I opened up Slack, and I was like, I saw your story sitting there, and I was like, wait, is this like pre-written for edits? Did we get like a scoop that he's going pro? And I was like, I'm rubbing like the crap out of my eyes. I look and see, no, like he just committed last night. And I was like, dang. So we got a lot of stories to work through. He's Jonathan Kuminga, 6'8" small forward, really talented guy, big time scorer. He's now moved from 2021 to 2020. We'll talk about where he fits in that class. He's obviously joining the G League. We're going to have to talk about that. But I guess the first thing I wanted to run by you is Kuminga is now the fifth guy in the class of 2020 to go to the G League developmental program, along with Jalen Green, Isaiah Todd, Dacian Nix, and Kai Soto. And, well, they finally have a starting five. And so my question for you is, if that was a starting five in college basketball with Kai Soto at the five, Isaiah Todd at the four, Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga on the wings, and then Dacian Nix at the point, where would that slide in among, like, how would you rank that among starting fives in college basketball this year?
It would certainly be one of the most talented. They wouldn't be a team that wins in college. They would win, but they wouldn't be a legit national title contender in all likelihood. That's just typically not the way it works when you're dealing with five freshmen in a starting lineup against grown men. We've seen in college basketball, you need to be old. So I don't think that it is a team that would be a top five team in the country, but it's the team that would have the most high draft picks in the country because Kuminga and Green are going to be most likely two of the top five picks in the country in 2021. It would be a very talented team, but usually when you're that young, you're not going to win at the highest of levels. So it would be a team you're really afraid to play from a talent standpoint, but one, if you're an opposing coach at a legit top 25 program, you're saying, you know what? We're bigger, older, stronger. We'll find a way.
So like, if I give them, like, I'm just going to pick like a middle tier college basketball power five program out of the hat. So let's say this starting five was gifted, I don't know, Clemson's bench. Like, what are you saying? This is a 22 win team. This is like a 19 win team that sneaks in and then makes a run in the tournament. Like, you know, I just think this is a fun and ridiculous exercise to do in July.
I don't think to be a top two seed, like either the one or the two line. I could see them in the 3-4 line range. I think that's possible, though maybe like a 5-7 would be more likely. I mean, I think they'd be a top five team throughout the year. I'm not sure that they would be a top 10 team. So it'd be a team who everyone, you know, in Vegas, you know, you wouldn't get great odds on for a whole variety of reasons. But they, you know, they'd be a team everyone would point to, man, if they put it together, then you would just keep waiting for them to put it together.
That sounds like something we as college fans might do. So let's turn to the G League. Now that they've got a starting five, I guess there are going to be basketball games in the G League in addition to their workouts and their kind of sequestered life in Southern California. And our former colleague Evan Daniels had said that, you know, as long as this is, you know, the kids going to the G League or the kids going pro overseas, as long as those are, you know, fringe top 10 guys, fringe top 5 guys, you know, it'll happen. It'll be good kids going away from college. But once we start getting into the top kid in the class, then it might pose a serious threat to college basketball. And so I'm curious, now that we have, you know, Kuminga reclassified, he's the number 4 in the 2020 rankings for us, but he was 20 in 2021, he was number 1. So we basically have a number 1 kid going pro. And I'm curious, you know, does this mark a different moment for you? Or is this just par for the course? We're going to have guys who are in that elite tier who are eventually going to just going to take the money on the table.
I'm going to disagree with the great Evan on this one. I actually think that those top guys going to the G League is probably better for college basketball than, you know, a Dacian Nick and around UCLA for 2 or 3 years in theory. To me, like missing out on Jalen Green or missing out on Jonathan Kuminga, like we've seen what happens. I mean, college basketball survived just fine without LeBron freaking James. Like, did anyone say, oh, college basketball is going to die, LeBron went pro right away? No. Now, of course, you want him in college basketball if you're – well, at least you should. Now, college basketball fans get really weird about one and done sometimes. But, like, I mean, had LeBron James suited up at Ohio State or North Carolina, something tells me, like, that kind of would have been good for college basketball. But at the end of the day, like, it's not going to ruin the sport. It's not – deal. Kids are always going to take a professional path in basketball. That's just what it is. And if that means 5 guys decide to play in Southern California, so be it. There's a lot of other really good players, and the brands of college basketball are what sells more than the individual. And you'll get a unique Zion Williamson case every now and again, but like, did Anthony Edwards like really change college basketball at Georgia? Did Markel Fultz change it at Washington? I mean, like, college basketball would have been fine with him and would have been fine without him.
I think a lot of stuff to unpack there. The year that LeBron would have gone to college was the year that Melo took Syracuse. Or was it? No, he wasn't. They were in the same draft.
Which Melo's my age. Year. LeBron's 1 year younger.
That is an interesting way to date yourself. Well, I have a Melo jersey from Syracuse. I just feel like, you know, there will be guys who go to college. There will be, and somebody is going to this year. Somebody this year is going to have a Cade Cunningham jersey from Oklahoma State, and someone else is going to have a Jonathan Kuminga G League jersey, and they're both going to be throwback jerseys, and they're both going to sell quite nicely.
Yeah, you know, people love them some throwback jerseys. Me, I'm not a jersey guy. Don't wear jerseys, but to everyone who does, go for it.
I have a really we're about to get completely off topic, and I'm fine with that. I have such a hard time. I love jerseys, but I have such a hard time figuring out when is the appropriate time to wear them. And like the last 3 times I wore jerseys, I show up and they're like, "What the hell are you doing wearing a jersey here?" I was like, "I don't know. I just don't wear it enough, and I need it. It's a Melo jersey. Like, I don't know. Melo Syracuse is a sick jersey." So you wrote an article late last night moving Jonathan Kuminga to the 2020 class. You've slotted him in at the 4 spot. And yet there are a lot of people who are talking about Kuminga as potentially the number 1 pick in the 2021 draft, maybe even ahead of Cade Cunningham and the other guys ahead of him. And so I'm curious, you know, what kind of dropped him down from 1 in 2021 to 4 in 2020 for you?
This is that thing that so many people in basketball, for whatever reason, do. They like value the unknown at this highest level. Like the new shiny toy is somehow the better toy. And that's just not kind of how it works. Like that's what gets, what you see a lot in the NBA, a lot of teams draft in the lottery in perpetuity, basically, it seems like, because they keep valuing what they don't know about a kid instead of like, hey, we've actually seen him be good. And they're like, well, we haven't seen this kid be bad at something, so that means we can make him good. That's not necessarily how it works. But in terms of where he slotted in and why, we all were in agreement, Jerry Meyer, Josh Gershon, Travis Branham, and myself, that he would not slot above Cade Cunningham or Jalen Green. We felt they were superior prospects. The decision came between 3 and 4 and how we were going to do that in regard to Evan Mobley. I'll be honest, I was the initial vote. I voted him ahead of Evan Mobley. I just thought, I'm not big on ranking centers that highly to begin with, and Mobley is a center. But after talking it over with Josh, Travis, and Jerry, we all kind of came to the consensus that Kuminga, while he has a higher ceiling, also has a much lower, and there's a few more holes in his game. So we decided to slot him just below Mobley and put him in the 4 spot with the understanding that he's probably the most naturally talented kid in the class, but he also has more bust potential, and bust potential being a relative term, than Jalen, Cade Cunningham, and Evan Mobley.
Do you think that Kuminga is like a lock to go ahead of Mobley in the NBA draft?
I don't know about a lock. So much of that is going to depend on team need and who's drafting. So I wouldn't say a lock. I'd say NBA teams are more inclined to draft someone with Kuminga's skill set over someone with Mobley's. That doesn't mean that he's a more effective player. It's just what their general inclination is when drafting younger prospects.
Okay, so let me dig in, because I think this Jonathan Kuminga example is a nice opportunity to kind of get under the surface a little bit on 24/7 Sports' philosophy as it pertains to rankings. Because I know Jerry has told me that you guys kind of always have your eye a little bit to the future. At the end of the day, the NBA is the barometer for basketball skill and talent and development. And I think if I understood Jerry correctly, that you guys kind of always have an eye towards the NBA and the NBA draft. So how would you say that calculation and projection factors into this specific decision and your general decision-making process in general?
Well, part of it is, yes, the NBA draft is important, but where they're drafted isn't as important as how good we think they're going to be. Just because we think, or I should say I, not we, just because I think it's more likely that Jonathan Kuminga is drafted higher than Evan Mobley, it doesn't necessarily mean that I think Jonathan Kuminga will be a better player than Evan Mobley in the NBA. NBA teams, centers aren't like running backs in terms of the fact that they have no value.
I saw you ranting about that on Twitter this morning.
Yeah. Like, so centers, like, they still have more value than like a running back, who's the most replaceable position in all of team sports. Don't get me going on that. But teams are still going to be more hesitant on a center than they are a talented, versatile wing. So the talented, versatile wing might be drafted higher just because it can impact the game more if everything goes right. And NBA teams are always looking for that like next superstar. Whereas like Jonathan Kuminga could be a 10, you know, like a 10 out of 10 talent in the NBA. Evan Mobley probably can't. He could probably only be like an 8.5 or a 9. But Evan Mobley's probably also, his floor is like a 7. Jonathan Kuminga's floor is like a 5. So you have to balance those things and determine who do we think is going to have the better career. Because ultimately, no one cares if Sam Bowie got drafted ahead of Michael Jordan. You still look like an idiot if you ranked Sam Bowie ahead of Michael Jordan.
So, you know, our football guys, they like to use the NFL draft as their barometer, because that's the information that's available to them. And it sounds like you disagree philosophically that the draft is, you know, only a reflection of team needs and team situations that might not even have to do with on-court things. And so at the end of the day, you're going to grade yourself against these guys' long-term career performances.
Tony, I think there's a difference between the macro and the micro on this. Like,
I'm listening.
You know, like it can vary. In a macro, though, where it's like the entire draft, odds are number 1 is going to be better than 2, who's better than 3, who's better than 4, who's better than 5, and so on and so forth. That's just reality. That's why, you know, like law of large numbers applies. But if you're asking about a specific situation, it's tough to point to like this specific situation is why we're going to do it this way. It's got to be a macro large scale view, because when you start looking at one-offs, that's going to screw you up completely.
That's interesting. I think we're going to have to do a longer thing on this. I know our supervisor, Luke Stampini, was kind of thinking along these same lines, wondering, you know, do we have an organizational philosophy? And I think that's really informative for the people who read our content, your content, I should really say, because I think it gives context. You know, not everybody's ranking the exact same thing, which I think is why our composite product is so valuable, because it puts all those different kind of perspectives and biases in one pot. It's certainly an interesting conversation. I don't really have much to add. You've been doing this for a lot longer than me. I guess for the people at home hearing how this is long-winded and not so organized, well, that was planned, right? We didn't come in here with an agenda. And so I want to come back to Kaminga's decision to choose the G League over college programs. Texas Tech obviously was presumed leader on the college side. Auburn, Duke, and Kentucky were also involved. But I want to ask about Texas Tech specifically because, as many people know, Kaminga's brother, whose name I'm going to butcher, Joel Ntambwe, he plays for the Red Raiders. And so, you know, I had a theory I've been working on since the spring that the guys who have the opportunity to go to the G League and then choose college are going to be the ones who have an emotional tie to college basketball, whether it's a family member on staff, like a couple of the guys in our top five in 2020, or maybe someone like Zion, who just always wanted, you know, to enjoy the pageantry of college basketball, whatever it is. And here we have an example in Jonathan Kuminga of a guy who spurned a family tie and went to the G League anyway. And so I'm curious, you know, what would you say to my take, I guess, in the context of Kuminga definitely going right against it?
Well, Kuminga was always going to go pro, really. I Texas Tech, I think they just kind of basically said, like, hey, if you want to come, you can, but we're not going to waste our time. And certainly the other schools involved, they weren't wasting their time at all. The expectation was he was always going to go pro. Now, a little bit different, Jonathan Kuminga, he's not native to America. Even though he spent plenty of time here, it's not like he moved here yesterday. But he didn't have that deep-seated attachment to college basketball, didn't grow up watching college basketball, which kind of changes the equation. Where it gets unique is, like, Zion probably made $75 to $100 million by going to Duke. That would not have happened in the G League. There's a difference between being an Instagram celebrity and being a celebrity. And you're not going to become a celebrity in the G League. You can become a celebrity in college basketball. And you market, it's so much easier to market as a college basketball person because no one's a fan of an unnamed G League team. There are no fans of unnamed G League teams. They simply don't exist.
Well, if I could push back on you for a second, I don't think there's anybody who's really a fan of, like, elite high school teams, and yet Zion, Spartan Christian, is able to get, you know, however many million followers on Instagram, and, you know, so many of the elite athletes are getting thousands upon thousands of views on YouTube. No one's fans of teams on that level. I think, and to push back even further, I think no one has become a celebrity from the G League yet. I think now with this first cohort, the onus is now going to be on the NBA to prove that you can.
What I would tell you is I talked to people at Nike who do shoe deals. There's a 0.0% chance they were giving Zion Williamson a massive shoe deal coming out of high school. 0.0. And then by January, it turned into the biggest bidding war since LeBron James.
You make a very strong point there.
Like, I mean, it just wasn't happening. But it's not to say you can't become popular. You can absolutely become popular by being a great high school ball player or someone theoretically playing in the G League. But to have a rabid fan base following means a lot more, not to mention you're on TV. You know, you're on CBS, you're on Fox, ESPN, whatever. The G League's not going to be. People become familiar with you. They get to know you. They feel like they know you, even though they really don't. For marketers, having that year of college basketball is worth so much more. Now, Zion's a one in a million situation, realistically. Like, that's not going to happen often. You know, as good as much as Jalen Green have an unbelievable college career, like, he might be like a very different player, but in terms of celebrity, like Trae Young didn't sign a massive shoe deal. So, you know, there's something to be said, like, hey, take the money while you can. Now, I think that money's going to dry up. I don't see the owner paying $500,000 a player when their GMs don't even want this going forward, especially in a post-pandemic world, whenever we are in a post-pandemic world. So I think, like, take advantage of it while you can if you want to do it, because I don't think it's going to be around very often or very long. But, you know, it's going to be a different case for different kids, and some are just going to want to play college basketball. Like, ultimately, like, Cade Cunningham was never going to the G League. It's not what he wanted to do. If he didn't go to Oklahoma State, he was going to Kentucky. And he had no real emotional tie to Kentucky. He just felt that best place for him. You know, Greg Brown turned down a crap ton of money. I don't know how many crap tons, but a crap ton of money to go to Texas. You know, like, he didn't want to go to the G League. I think that's just as normal a situation as one who will go to the G League.
All right, that's also very interesting. I got one last question, and as we've been doing in this episode, just jumping from topic to topic. Class of 2019, very disappointing, at least in the first year of output post high school. Class of 2021 is now feeling pretty weak, but class of 2020, like, feels pretty strong now that we've seen pretty much all the kids in the 2020 class make their decision about where they're going to go. How would you stack up this class 2020 versus 2021, 2019, and maybe the past, I don't know, a handful of years?
You know, it's 2020 better. Certainly at the top, it's better. There's no question about that. Now you start getting into how do you rank a class? Do you rank it by the top five guys, the top guy, the top 100 guys, the top 200 guys? There's different ways to do it. Like, some classes aren't great at the top, but have just a ton of depth. 2020 is really good. I don't think it's one of the best. I can't remember which years each is specifically, but it probably wouldn't rank as like one of the best classes I've ever seen. The class with like OJ Mayo, Eric Gordon, Derrick Rose, Kevin Love, Blake Griffin, like, that class will go down in history.
Isn't that 07?
It's a long time ago. I'm old. So, you know, it's not that one, but it's a good class. 19 was a little underwhelming. 21, I think, has a little bit more depth than it's given credit for, but right now it doesn't seem to have the studs at the top. So it kind of comes to your perspective of how do you view a class.
All right, well, that's all I got. You got any parting shots about Jonathan Kuminga, about the G League, about the classes of 2020, 2021? Got anything else you want to get on the record?
I'd say everything is out there that I wanted to say.
Amazing. Well, you can follow Brian Snow on Twitter. What's your handle?
At BSnow247.
Got to get him there, BSnow247. As our editor, Trey Scott, said, make sure to get Brian Snow on the show. He's got opinions. And the same goes for you guys on Twitter. Make sure to follow him. He's got good opinions. I promise you, he was serious about the running back take. You can read him on 247sports.com. Lots of stuff about Jonathan Kuminga's reclassification, class of 2020 upcoming, I imagine, articles about class of 2021. Topic to be determined. This is going to be the end of this week's for the 247 Sports College Basketball Show. You like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, rate and review on Apple Podcasts. But for Brian Snow, for Jonathan Kuminga, I'm Tony Levitt, and this is the 247 Sports College Basketball Show.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does. 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.